Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
All right.
Woo. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, pretty good.
Not bad. We watched, movies that we recommended to each other.
Movies that we mentioned to each other. Didn't really recommend them.
Which you both threw back in surprise when I'd actually seen them.
Yeah.
Nine and Golden Compass.
Yeah.
Yep. What'd you think?
Well, I had watched Nine first, and I said that it was visually very, very interesting, very attractive, some nice set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But the story seemed kind of compressed, truncated, short.
Unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ending could have been better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it wasn't so much that the ending was good or bad. It's just like, oh, there's the ending. Well, yeah, I guess that was all that should have been.
Yeah. Like like you said, there's some cool set pieces. I like
I like the idea of the nine little dolls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's nine.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler.
Yeah.
Well, it's called Nine. It has little dolls on the front of the box.
Nine written on him.
Yeah. It's not that much of a spoiler, but...
kind of premise.
Yeah, premise.
Yeah, nice. Caution, we're talking about the premise of a movie.
Yeah, there was some...
Premise alert. The movie Seven is about the seven deadly sins.
It's a war that takes place among the stars.
So, all right.
Have you seen Battle Beyond the Stars?
I haven't.
Oh, okay. It was this early Star Wars knockoff.
Oh, cool.
Oh, really?
But it's a Roger Corman film.
Hmm.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Better than Nine?
I say better than Nine, but I probably saw it when I was nine. It's one of those movies you don't want to go back and watch again to see if it still holds up.
Yeah, we were talking about that with Robin Hood, the Kevin Costner one.
Yeah, you were saying Prince of Thieves. You liked it when you first watched
it.
Yeah,
which was back in high school, but now I went back and watched it.
My, have you grown?
I'm a full foot taller.
Well,
was I ever so young, Kevin, to appreciate your accent?
Wouldn't that be kind of... Like a bad point, though, if you're like, oh, yeah, this movie was awesome when I saw it in high school. You go back and you're like, yeah, I saw it again. It was awesome. And your friends are all just like, it isn't.
That happens to me a lot,
well, what if it was a great movie?
Well, if it was a great movie and everybody agrees it was a great movie, then you're fine.
What if all your friends are dumb and they don't agree?
Then I think there's a chance that you're the one who's wrong.
No, the reason I liked so much is I played the NES Robin Hood game, which was really cool. It was a cool RPG. But so I was looking forward to it, like, oh, I saw that in the game, that's in the movie, wow!
No. Yeah. I was thinking of the, it's not a movie, but I was thinking of the 80s, no, early 90s Conan, the Adventurer cartoon. Because Lyle and I were talking about the new Conan movie that's going to come up.
Yeah, we saw the trailer for Conan. It's going to be 3D?
Yeah, it's going to be 3D.
Every movie's 3D now.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't I predict that it was going to die? Boy, was I wrong.
It's simple profit, man. They can charge you $5 extra for the goggles. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. Anyway, my point was, like...
I should say go back into hibernation.
So my point was, like, when I was in, you know, early high school, that cartoon series was... I really liked it. It was awesome. But I'm sure if I went back and watched it now, it would be terrible.
Oh, and any 80s cartoons is like that.
Yeah.
Transformers, G.I. Joes, Thundercats, Ho.
Yeah. Watch Thundercats again in university, and you're like, man, this thing has a cheesy moral at the end of every episode. God, how can you watch this?
They all did that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they did.
G.I. Joe was
and
always...
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe. That was pretty good, actually. the other movie, Wayne had watched it first, and we're not terribly topical, but...
yeah.
The Golden Compass.
Oh, I can't wait for the sequel.
There's not going to be one. There's not going to be one.
Spoiler alert.
There will be no Amber Spyglass or Subtle Knife movie.
Did either of you guys read the books?
No. Yes.
Well, I didn't read them. I listened to them on audio tape.
And any good?
Aren't they for kids?
Yeah, they're kind of for...
So is Harry Potter, but he likes that too.
I thought the first...
It's not a really negative, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I thought the first book, the Golden Compass, was the best. The next book, which was The Subtle Knife, actually takes place kind of in our world a little bit.
Yeah.
And that one was okay. And the last book, The Amber Spyglass, like, I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
A, because the main character kind of goes from being... I have this thing about, like, strong characters.
Uh-huh. Right?
So she kind of meets this appropriately aged boy... And they kind of fall in love, even though I'm only about, like, 13. And by the end of the third book, she can't do anything by herself. Like, sort of, the boy has taken over this leadership role, and she just kind of sits there and essentially does nothing and kind of doesn't know what to do. And I don't know, I think they kind of ruined the character.
You know, she's quite a free spirit. As
yeah,
say,
well, not free spirit, but she can at least do things for herself and make decisions for herself. And they just kind of took that away from her at the end. And there was this whole thing at the end, spoiler alert, about true love, but they have to be separated. And as I'm listening to this, I'm saying, you're 13. Doesn't...
Every love you have when you're 13 is true.
And whatever. Know. Just kind of like, really disintegrated at the end.
That's why I was figuring, like, you know, the old myths and stories from the Middle Ages and ancient Greece and stuff, they're all these huge romantic epics, because I figured everyone there, the adults, quote-unquote, are like 15, 16 years old. Remember when you're like, when a teenager, everything is to the extreme.
Oh, but you're assuming that teenagers back then thought the same way as teenagers do now.
Yes, I am assuming that.
Yeah.
You don't think so?
No, I think they were too busy working in the fields to consider true love.
Yeah. Boy, this is, my hormones are tired. I wish they were raging. I think they'd be, yeah, there's probably some similarities, but I just studied something in university, and it's called historical mentalism.
Mm-hmm.
And you have trouble. We naturally assume that people kind of think the same as us, and they might, but it's really hard to tell, because, for example, just the fact that there's electric lighting, it has a significant, it makes a significant difference in the way we interact and we think.
Mm-hmm.
We're not as afraid of the dark anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't make up stories. Well, we do, but we know their stories.
Yeah.
Except for the crazies. So, like, yeah, maybe 15, you would think that you're a man grown.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine. Yeah, I suppose a 12-year-old kid would say, I'm an adult now, or I'm almost an adult. Mm. But no one would really believe that, I guess. Or no one would really go, yeah, I guess you're only a year away from getting married, so you are almost an adult.
The way I see it is, it's not so much the method of thinking, just emotionally.
I think if I can... just offer some support, though. I think, yeah, if you're dying at 40, then, yeah, that little romance at 15 does become, I think, a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Because then she became your wife. No, but it is becoming big, because your lifespan is really short, and you don't meet as many people. So now people go on the internet and travel a lot more, so they're meeting a lot more people, falling in and out of love a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know.
I'm just thinking emotionally, this teenagers are like that. Yeah, you know, we're really off topic.
Really
now.
Wonderful. You know who falls in love a lot? Gangsters.
Well, that's gonna be like,
you know what I love?
Transition ever.
Gangster movies.
Were there any gangsters in Golden Compass?
Yeah, you could argue that there was an organized crime group. Golden Compass.
Guys, it's already a rocky segue. Don't
bother. But I will say this for the Golden Compass. I actually did enjoy it. It does have some flaws to it. But I really like the production design. And I think sometimes that kind of wonky tech, is it magic, is it tech, can get tiresome. But I thought it did really well with it.
Agreed.
And
yeah,
there was like some little things.
But I was disappointed that there wasn't going to be a sequel. So
I actually wasn't. I thought it was kind of awkward, the build-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I really like those polar bears. But I like polar bears.
Yeah, the polar bears were cool.
And even though you know it's CG, I thought that was really well done.
Mm, agreed.
So I would think that the Golden Compass is worth watching.
Mm.
I think there's a few little ideas you might pick up for your game.
Mm.
The girl kind of grew on me. The child actress in a previous episode we talked about HBO Game of Thrones having some really solid child actors. And the girl here was pretty decent.
One that I'd recommend similar to that is Spiderwick as well. It's kind of, me and my wife went through a phase where we watched...
children's movies?
Yeah, children's and fantasy mixed kind of thing. There was a bunch of crap ones.
Then she graduated from high school.
The Seeker and stuff. And I'm going to ignore that. And then we watched Spiderwick, which was really good, yeah.
Man, rough. All right, so...
But today's topic.
Graduated from high school.
There's not going to be love.
You know who also graduated from high school? Gangsters.
And there you go. I just said no. But did they? Maybe that's why they went into that. A little clash already.
Wiping away tears.
Yeah.
Well, for our second creature feature...
We're kind of broadening the terms of the word creature.
Kind of broke the idea by going right to gangsters. But we somebody talked.
Gangsters are people too.
just like werewolves.
Yeah, they're creatures.
Sometimes.
Yeah, we just couldn't think of anything to rhyme with profession.
Profession, confession?
Oh, damn. Damn, there you go. Well, we're locked in the creature feature.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Anyway.
So, somebody on the forums, Despair, I believe.
Yeah.
Is his forum name. Asked about, or brought up Japanese pink cinema and gangsters, the Yakuza in particular. Mm. So we thought we would talk about gangsters in general, not only the Yakuza, but them as well, mm-hmm. and look into gangsters from fiction and legend, as well as how to use them as protagonists and antagonists.
So where do we start?
Gangsters of fiction.
Sounds good.
And history.
The one that we did first. Sounds good.
I thought we'd start at the beginning.
And when you get to the end, stop. I don't know.
What's that from?
So.
Well, doing my research on gangsters, I kind of divided it into, like, first you would look at the different types of mobs. Mm-hmm. Like the mafia versus the Yakuza versus the Russian mob, mm-hmm. the triad. I don't think it's terribly interesting or necessary to divide the episode by let's talk about the triads, let's talk about the Yakuza. But just certain things came up, like for example, the mafia and I really can't pronounce this, but I'll give it a go.
Uh-huh.
See, and please just look at the tags for the correct spelling at least. The Drangheta. So they're the mafia originated from Sicily. The 'Ndrangheta originated from Calabria, which is the toe of Italy,
which I
learned by doing this research. But yeah, they have codes. So I think, and Wayne brought up prior to the podcast, what's going to differentiate between organized crime or gangsters
mm-hmm.
and
just common
criminals? Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that differentiates them is they have codes.
Well, I think to go kind of broader, and it sounds almost pithy, but organized crime is really organized. Like it's run like a business or a small country. You know, it has sometimes they have their own language. Actually, oftentimes they have their own language.
Would you say they have bosses?
Yes.
Sorry.
I would.
Yeah. No, I think the company analogy is pretty pretty amped. And I think the mafia, at least if my reading of James Elroyd is correct. I hope he did the research. I believe they call themselves the Outfit, mm-hmm. as opposed to referring to themselves as the Mafia.
Well, a lot of the Russian Mafia was the Brastra, I think. I don't remember the name, but it translates to the Brotherhood.
Mm. Yep.
And what the Yakuza is 893.
Yeah, which is something different, but.
Yeah, it's a series of numbers, but
which was a losing hand.
I think the Yakuza name is interesting, just to differentiate it from the Russian mob, which means like a brotherhood. Mm-hmm. Is that name gives a little hint at their origins?
Mm-hmm.
So like how they, and again, this is a maybe perhaps something common among organized. And I guess for stating the obvious is that they did organize for whatever reason, and in that case, organized the gambling or organized the protection rackets.
Yeah.
And so they were different. I guess in the Yakuza's case, they're like the low...
The Burakumin, yeah.
Yeah, which if you could translate...
It's what's just the underclass of feudal Japan, Japanese society.
Yeah.
There was a stigma against handling meat and death. So mm-hmm. people who were executioners, butchers, things mm-hmm. like that, they kind of were a lower caste word. It's still around now, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that, like, for example, Osaka, and probably they're not the only city that does that, they kind of save jobs for those people because they still get discriminated against.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Sanitation workers, a lot of them are from that. But they're actually really good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it's kind of to compensate for the discrimination they
have. Yeah, a Japanese buddy of mine said he was actually really angry about it. He said, like, they get free health care from the government as kind of like an apology for having been underclass for a thousand years. But he was really against that. He thought it was really unfair.
But from our own countries, I mean, we've got, like, the First Nations in Canada and Native Americans.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Like, I don't actually disagree.
I believe if you live on the reservation, First Nation people who live on the reservation, they don't have to pay income tax.
Hmm.
I think once they leave the reservation, they have to. But anyway.
Off topic again.
I was going to say, bring it back to codes, because that's kind of interesting. Like, did they give example of what kind of codes they have? So for using in, like, a game sense, would it be, like a cryptogram kind of message where you would just
the knights, a knight has a code of chivalry.
Code
of conduct, code of behavior.
No, Sorry.
Okay. You meant like
secret code.
Yeah. When you said code, like, I thought it was like secret code.
Well, they have a cant.
Yeah, they have their own cant and jargon and stuff. I mean, yeah. We're talking about groups and organizations that are thousands of years old in some cases. So absolutely.
Like even carnies have a cant and something. Some gangsters.
I like the pause that came out.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was drinking. That was the pause.
No, I was just trying to think of where to go with carnies.
Yeah,
just like carnies, which connects to organized crime. How?
Do they have bosses?
They rip people off. They're organized. Organized crime.
All right. Yeah.
No, but the Italian organized crime group that I can't pronounce, from the toe of Italy, from Calabria, they have, for example, the Omerta, which is the code of silence, which you could probably imagine like a lot of organized crime. Organized crime groups would have a code of silence, and maybe that's why we've never heard of them. Even though apparently they've got a lock on the Italian drug trade, more so than the mafia.
Well, but the mafia was against trading drugs for the longest time.
Yeah, they and then they were against trading. At least if we look at the North America mafia, the North American Cosa Nostra, they're against dealing drugs to white people.
Yeah.
And then when they moved to Las Vegas, they were against introducing certain kinds of drugs, such as heroin, which is too hard, and they thought that because they wanted to live in Las Vegas. So
and I think everything's just out the window now. It's probably all just out the window now, especially if they have that kind of competition.
But code of honor, code of brotherhood, code of secrecy, code of violence, code of solidarity, code of mutual assistance. So that was the code for that specific group. But I'm sure that you would see that popping up on, I mean, if the Russian mob is calling themselves the Brotherhood.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they have their own, like, actually, this kind of goes into what you're saying with, like, a secret code. They have tattoos in the Russian mafia, and each one has a different kind of meaning, denoting your status, how many people
you killed. You know, watching 24, that they were talking, they got people analyzing what the tattoos mean.
Yeah, I saw that on another TV show as well, Criminal Minds. Great TV show, by the way, if anyone's...
Criminal Minds?
Criminal Minds. It's about...
No, I know it, but with Manny Patinkin.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Is that great?
Really, really good.
Really?
Yeah, well, when was the last time you two agreed on movies?
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Probably
Golden Compass.
I was still fairly shocked. But anyway.
Whenever I hear Criminal Minds, I always think of the Gowan song. Or Lawrence Gowan. He's a Canadian singer, but he had Criminal Mind.
Oh, okay.
That's a decent song. Check it out. From the 80s. So is his mullet.
Man, half the people at Osaka must be from the 80s. So anyway, I guess...
Lammer Times stood still.
Yeah, really. So... I guess going kind of bring it to like a game perspective, that might be the first step in making sort of gangsters feel like gangsters rather than just sort of common criminals, is to give them some kind of code.
Well, yeah,
such
I mean,
as a code of secrecy or the mutual assistance where they all kind of stick together.
Right. And that is something that comes up, you know, with your NPCs.
Mm.
It's because, you know, I can't say because I swore an oath, and you're like. You're a common thief. And he's like, oh, no. And it does elevate them from, like, common thief to, like, part of the thieves guild or whatever.
It's interesting word elevation as well with that. Like, when I think of organized crime, one of the aspects that I think of most is violence.
No, there was a code of violence. There is some... Sorry, go ahead.
I think, of course, they're just non-organized criminals, if that makes sense. Standard standalone criminals, they have the capacity for violence and sometimes are, but some of the things that you see out of the mafia with hits and with revenge killings and stuff like that, it's some pretty grotesque violence.
I hear the Colombian necktie.
Yeah.
Cut a guy's tongue and then cut his throat and stick the tongue in.
Yeah. Oof. What was those two English brothers you were talking about? They like stabbed a guy so badly that his liver fell out.
Oh, the Krays. Yeah. The twin... They're twins, and they kind of ruled the, at least the London underworld for the 50s and definitely the 60s.
Yeah.
But they're also active in the 50s.
But anyway, if I were putting an organized crime ring in my campaign, that'd probably be one of the things that I would choose to.
But they say like one of the brothers was like bona fide crazy of the two Krays, and they say that Reggie the more sane one. I wanted to say younger, but they're twins. He just, I guess. Being sane makes you younger. No logic there, people. I guess he was a better organizer, but Ronnie, the crazy one, he was the more violent. So, but it was the violence that helped them rule.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you have an organization. What are the things that help you rule that organization? So, but I was even like going back to like initiation rituals. And the triads, they have the blood sacrifice, huge hugely violent. Yeah. Animals. They apparently sacrifice animals.
Yeah, because you have to take your pants off.
Back to that joke. All
right. No, really, you do. You have to display any tattoos that are already on your body, so you have to go...
I was just trying to connect me sacrificing animals to Yakuza taking their pants off.
So was I.
They're both initiation rituals.
Okay.
Yeah, I read that too about the Yakuza. They kind of like the...
I was trying to the violent initiation rituals, but...
Maybe his pants were violently taken off, I don't know.
All right, you know what? Going to place, and didn't want to go.
Line crossed, let's go back.
Boom, boom. Relax.
No. So, no, I guess, back to the violence thing, that could be another way to kind of show that this organization is, in fact, organized, sort of, I don't know, this may be a sweeping generalization, but sort of the common criminals, sounds like a terrible thing to say, might not be that creative mm-hmm. in their killings, right? It's just somebody gets gunned down or shot.
Again, I'm going to bring up GURPS Mysteries, because it's a fantastic book. And I get no royalties for saying this every episode.
Even though you think you might.
Anyway, Steve Jackson, please give us royalties.
Could I finish what I was going to say before you're going to say that?
Sure.
Sorry, so...
I like that you actually answered no at first.
So anyway, I guess the slightly more creative killings, such as the Colombian necktie or other things like that, could be a way to show that, yeah, this is a group of organized criminals. Because mm-hmm. that seems to be a bit more of their... forte, I guess, than common street crime.
Yeah, I think that's good. You give their violence a little panache. I was just making it get most murders are not very well done and not very clever. Mm-hmm. And criminals aren't generally, there's not a lot of masterminds.
Right.
But an organized crime, you know, if somebody's got to like climb to the top of that organization, it could be through, cunning.
Yeah. It could also be through family ties as well. So
could be through family ties.
Fear.
Yeah, great sitcom. Or it could be just through brute.
I like when Michael J. Fox was just cracking people in the skull.
He ruled with an iron fist.
I'm searching my memory, trying to come up with a Family Ties quote that I can put in an Italian accent, but I just don't get it.
Just leave it alone.
Alex! Yeah, but getting... one of the points I was making about the
sorry to run you off the rails with that there.
Where am I? Who am I? What's this microphone doing in front of me? But the violent rituals is that, and we had a little bit of dispute prior to recording the episode, is that when I asked, are we going to include gangsters? But I think I was outvoted in saying no. You guys didn't think that they counted as organized crime, but they have some of the same.
I do think same tropes.
Same tropes, and one of them is, you know, if unless movies lie to me, they have they have rituals where they put somebody through like a gauntlet, and people beat them up, and they got to take it. If Colors, the movie Colors is accurate, I believe Latino gangs do that. But also, Hell's Angels probably has a violent, very violent way, just to show that you're tough and you can take it,
And also that you're loyal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That gets to my second point. They also have like a sense of brotherhood, mm-hmm. and that you don't want to betray, you know, go against the gangs.
You've all been beaten by the same people. Forms a connection.
Well,
yeah,
hey,
fraternities. There we go. Yeah, actually, when we were looking up triads, we had to sift through a bunch of fraternities to find that. And when we were talking about like the Hong Kong triads.
So Wayne, did you drink blood for your fraternity?
Yeah.
Took off your pants.
Didn't do that. Drink blood. That was pretty good.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. Dude. Is that serious? No.
Cool.
But that could be an interesting thing. Just now, you had a criminal organization in one of your games, Chris, where they basically all got branded.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
like the Yakuza when they get the tattoo themselves.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's another thing, and we already touched on that with the Russian mafia having tattoos that actually mean something.
Yeah.
So there could be like a little code, and I think that could really add a level of
realism.
Level of realism, but also a level of I'm going to say mystery, but where that, you know, you find a body of a gangster, mm-hmm. and then it becomes and getting back to the kind of Da Vinci Code you were thinking of at the beginning, Wayne, but you're basically using this body to basically unlock pieces of information.
Absolutely.
Who was this person? Check his tattoos. It tells you kind of his his history.
Well, that, and that thing, that, that's a really, really good idea. Did you just come up with that now?
Yeah, actually I did.
That's awesome.
Well, I you know, got it from 24.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, like, the idea where you pass something to the players that contains a code, and then they have to work to figure that out. I mean, putting it on a body, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And this is kind of like the history of that person. That's, and we talked about history last episode.
That sounds almost good enough to build a whole campaign on.
Lyle actually kind of did a little bit with the...
Actually, slightly, yeah, come
with,
to think of it, yeah.
With the symbols carved into the victims.
Yeah, yeah, that wasn't... I
no,
suppose
it wasn't the same. You weren't going for organized.
That was more like, a, I guess, a calling card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more in the super villainy, you know, Dr. Moriarty or Dr. Doom. Or
that's kind of a, that's kind of a hallmark of at least gangster movies as well, you know, kind of the horse head in Godfather, or
the giant she in Brotherhood. Okay, we'll cut that out.
I don't know that one. Or
sorry, Brotherhood.
Brotherhood, is it Brotherhood? No,
Brother.
It's Brother. Yes,
Brother with
Takeshi Kitano.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's funny you mention that, because it reminded me to come back to that.
They left the bodies in the shape of the kanji death sheet.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Or I was thinking, like, the calling card, you know, just like putting like a bullet in the mailbox, or, you know, tossing the fish wrapped in newspaper on the doorstep, and it's, oh, you know, Johnny Brosco sleeps with the fishes, you know? I mean, it's kind of cliche, but...
Especially with that accent.
Especially with that accent. But kind of like way back in one of our earlier episodes, like...
Freaking cliche.
Yeah, sometimes stereotypes work.
And bad puns.
And bad puns.
Yeah. Monsters are notorious for their bad punning.
Yeah. Well, I could see that as being used as well to kind of, again, elevate...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Criminal just to something that's more organized. I gotta come up with a better.
Yeah,
better
no, I was thinking that myself.
structured.
Okay, structured.
Okay, now we're gonna overuse structure.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, I really like that about organized crime is because of the different levels they can get through them. I think that it's a wonderful tool because you can go all the way up to the top where you've got these business people interacting with governments, making deals in boardrooms and kind of thing, all the way down to like just basic street level violence. Yeah, knee breakers kind of thing, and you can hit on any level with that. So it's wonderful to span an entire campaign or. Game with.
That's a good point to raise, because then you can have a continuing organization that actually progresses with the players in a very organic way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, I might be jumping ahead here in the points, but that was sort of one of the other things that I saw set structure organized crime apart from common street violence was the sort of top level untouchable bosses where kind of everybody knows they're the head of.
That works in gangs too, though.
Are we differentiating them?
I don't think so. I think that gangs are a form of organized crime.
Okay, here's the litmus test. New Jack City. Have you guys seen New Jack City? Oh, come on.
I think I've seen parts of it on TV. Sorry.
No, you live New Jack City.
All right. I never claimed that.
Miname
no Taiyo.
Well, I've lost my litmus test. Because I was going to say, is Wesley Snipes like The Godfather? But
how are we going to answer?
Yeah, no. I was just finishing my point for the listener. So, okay. Litmus test for the listener. New Jack City, is that an organized crime movie?
If you'd like to call in.
Sorry, I honestly thought that was a pretty commonly seen movie.
You'll find there's many common movies that I have not seen.
Oh, all right. Oh, I got
Rosebud, sorry. What are you talking about?
But I guess back to my point. Like, I see like the head of a gang.
Mm-hmm. I think what Wayne's talking about, like the Teflon dog,
yeah, exactly,
John Gotti.
That's what I'm talking. Like, you know, he can,
everybody knows.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
The boss.
Everybody knows to the point where he could like walk into the mayor's office or walk into a police station, and you know everybody knows that this guy is the head of whatever organization. But yeah, nobody can pin any crimes on him.
The reason I was going to say that it works with regular gangs as well is because it's the same situation. It's just a different setting. I mean, most of the gangs, like the. The Gangster Disciples, and what's the big Latino one? Latin Kings.
Yeah.
They're run from prisons. Their head groups are in prison, and it's the same deal. They can't walk into the mayor's office, but nobody touches them there.
Yeah, but I see that as a little bit different. Sorry, maybe it's the same result.
It is very different, it's also a kind of a different aspect that you could explore. If you didn't want to go the political route, you could still go that same way, going to the bosses. Still an untouchable person, but in a much more dangerous and violent area.
Yeah, I guess so. We always come back to semantics in that nobody is able or nobody sort of...
Same idea, different setting.
When Wayne was... When he first told me about, like, his hide-in-plain-sight boss, his words, and I immediately thought of the Teflon Don. But then that kind of game, and it could even be like, you know, the boss or the head gangster is in prison. They actually have like special units to deal with the gangs in the prison, special correction officers to deal with that. But then it's almost like it becomes like a Columbo mystery, where you know how the murder was done, and Columbo figures out who the murderer was straight away. But then the adventure, the challenges to link it,
go through the real challenge that police often face.
Right.
Yeah, so and, why not do that in a story?
But it's interesting that
and contrast that with the shadowy boss, and that's why when you brought up Beat Takeshi or Kintaro Takeshi, I was thinking of Zatoichi, where you don't know whether in that kind of story you don't know who the crime boss is, and you know, peeling layers to find out, okay, is that just an underling or the real boss, and that allows for a lot of twists in that type of story. So that's kind of interesting. So, and I think organized crime, as opposed to just having petty criminals, you can really play with who the boss is. Is it a shadowy boss? Is the boss like a Teflon Don, very slick, let's say? And, you know, to split the hairs that you guys are quite anxious to do, you can also have the confined boss, where they know where the location is, the prison.
Yeah, I was going to say that about... Like,
it's just how to touch them in there.
Yeah. You know? And there's some that aren't even hidden in plain sight. They're just there, and everybody knows that that's the case.
Like, yeah.
The Yamaguchi-gumi guy, the biggest Yakuza group in Japan, is a few miles from here. And like his house in Kitano, it's this huge compound. And if you walk past it, there's little cameras that follow you along the sidewalk. And everybody knows where that is nationwide, but nobody can do anything about it.
Well, you were saying before the podcast about how the Yakuza, basically, the entire organization is in plain sight.
Pretty much.
Mm. Like even the feeder fish, or the feeder group, is got...
The Bosozoku?
Yeah. I mean, they're...
Motorcycle gangs.
Yeah. Fairly organized for just like...
Definitely loud.
Well, they're more of kind of the gangs, like the street gangs groups, but it's weird. They don't have their own groups. It's exactly like you said, they're feeder fish.
They kind of graduate up to the Yakuza.
Yeah. When the Yakuza come to town, they know that they're in charge, and they kowtow to them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, I guess another benefit of using organized crime is... Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes in an adventure or a story, if you have kind of like the different layers of bosses or foes or enemies that the players have to go through, and they peel back layer one, and then there's that boss is actually the underling to another boss, and they go through that layer, and you just keep repeating that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I imagine that could get frustrating, or it just seems like you're continuing the story just to continue the story. But with like an organized crime group, that makes sense, because there are layers that you would work up through already in that organization, where, I don't know, sometimes like reading through published adventures, it's like, okay, you know, bad guy A leads them to bad guy B, who then leads them to bad guy C. And it just seems kind of like tacked on to prolong the story. And there's kind of no logical connection between those groups or those people. But if you use an organized crime group, then yeah, there is a logical kind of ladder that the story would progress up. Like you said, you start with kind of the knee breakers, and then, you know, the lieutenants, and maybe eventually you get all the way up to the top where you have that Teflon Don.
You can build in a moral quandary to that as well. I mean, when you get up to the top Teflon Don, if it's a very big and organized structure, again, like the Yakuza, maybe I'm using that as too many examples, but when you get to the top guy, he's not a murderer. He's a businessman.
I dispute that.
He has, of course, but like he doesn't say, whack that guy. He sits there, let's merge with this group, let's import this amount of illegal narcotics and such.
He uses euphemisms.
Exactly. So he's not as direct as the knee breaker out on the street is.
But that's the thing. Like, he runs... He's as bad as any other corporate boss, I imagine. Corrupt one, anyway.
Well, yeah.
No, I'm making generalizations.
Well, speaking of... Okay, so other as bad as other bosses, that was one of the other things that I saw that would sort of indicate that you're dealing with organized crime, is the fact that they have business fronts. And they have kind of these fake businesses. So
and they have legitimate people working
for them. Exactly, and they have legitimate people working for them, which, again, sort of sets them apart from kind of the common sort of street crime.
Mm. There's a Yakuza bar on the other side of your station.
Yeah, you mentioned that the other day. Which one?
It's near the bicycle.
Oh.
Bicycles. But apparently...
Should we all do a field trip and go visit there?
Yeah, we could do a field trip. Yeah, figure it on your bachelor party. But apparently, the some of the you're talking about like some of the people that work for them are legitimate. But you also got to think, in, especially with the Yakuza, a lot of them are tricked into
protection rackets and things.
Yeah, or I mean, these women don't want to work there and are trying to escape, and they don't get salaries.
Been
and stuff.
Imported and
from other countries. Yeah.
Yeah. True.
I was gonna say, I think the
but that's a way to have a, like slavery. A lot of times when you see like slavery coming up in. Movies, like modern movies and or TV shows, it'll be have that organized crime connection because they have that infrastructure to import people from another country and then put them to work, so to speak, euphemism. Or a very classic euphemism in Japan is the Mizushobai, the water trade. Which is basically the sex trade.
Yeah.
I wonder why it got called water trade.
Across water.
Okay.
Importing from Korea and China.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen
that. You know.
I've heard stories from students before saying like they've seen bars where the bar has a little door on the end, like the actual bar people sit and drink at, has a little door on the end for the waitresses to crawl inside if the cops come by, little locks up and hides them inside it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Creepy stuff.
Yeah. Why you would want to drink there.
Because you're also part of that, I guess.
Well, it depends how the girls looked.
Ooh.
too far across the line?
No, just an interesting admission of your morals, Wade.
All right, fine.
Just kidding. All right, so
then we talked a little bit of background. It's like how do we use them in the game as both antagonists or protagonists? One thing that came up is like this is kind of like a Robin Hood kind of scenario, but you could have actually the entire organization as being good if what they're opposing is very bad, like even worse. Such as 1920s Italy, where Mussolini was trying to suppress the mafia just so he could say, oh, I'm the one that got rid of the mafia. Look how organized Italy is now.
Yeah.
But then in that situation, you could conceivably cast then that organized crime is actually quite good. So people want to play the lovable rogues. Then you just have an organization that's worse than them.
Well, that's actually a very common feature in a lot of things. Like in the Middle East now, it's tough to say if terrorist organizations are organized crime or not. But regardless, you have leaders like in Libya, Gaddafi.
Yeah,
he's extremely against these fundamentalist groups, but it's not like he's a good guy at all. He's bombing his own civilians. Yeah, the Japanese, the Burakumin, they started off as the underclass. You know, they're treated horribly by regular people, so they organize together to fight back.
Well, when you think about protection rackets, it's there to protect.
Yeah.
Mm. It's just the fact when they force the protection, because to protect them from themselves, that's when it becomes bad. Yeah. But you could have it where they actually are protecting you from, the oppressive king.
Mm-hmm.
Or, the King's Guard and City Watch is corrupt. So they are actually the good guys. Or they are able, as you were saying before, they're able to cut through the red tape.
Yeah, that's very interesting. With the giant earthquake that just happened in Japan, a lot of the Yakuza are supplying the people who need food and water because there's too much red tape. Regular trucks can't get through all the laws, but Yakuza don't care.
That happened during the Kobe earthquake too, didn't it?
Yeah, actually, with the Yamaguchi-gumi. That was one of their big things that brought them to so much power.
Hmm. Yeah, so that is very kind of a Robin Hood-esque story, to the point where, some civilians or citizens may even kind of, see organized crime as kind of a tool of good, essentially, or at least
It'd be a hard sell, though, like to play a character like that, because you'd have to have pretty ambiguous morals. I mean, sure, you're doing things, but you're also a criminal at base.
Well, you're walking the line. Do you want to do a cop-out? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we don't do the drug trade. We only have stolen goods. And deal in that. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, it just came to me now. An idea for a campaign would be something on the cusp of that. It starts out as a Robin Hood organization, but it's gained enough power to the point where it's starting to get into the illicit activities. And how do the players deal with that?
Yeah, an internal conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of time you think about the gang wars, your focus is on rival gangs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the triad versus the mafia or the Russian mob or just rival groups within there. But you're actually your own organization has a schism over something like that. And ideally, your players are not for the sex slave trade.
Well, that could be a danger. So I would say don't make it about that. Yeah, make it about drugs or something else.
Because if your players are going to go there, but...
yeah.
Why do you say that? I mean...
Well, I mean, I guess it's one of those...
I can totally understand, slavery is a very... a very repellent idea, but sometimes you need a really repellent idea to reinforce that they're bad, you are better.
Hey, actually, that's a very good point, because, you know, if there's...
Because drug trade, like, so there's a libertarian. If you got a libertarian in your group, he's like, well, you know...
Yeah, or what if they're just doing, like, money laundering?
Well, yeah.
You know, that's...
Yeah, people see that's a victimist crime.
Yeah, granted, it is a terrible thing, but kind of as a player character,
Well, I was just thinking,
yeah,
like,
whereas, like, you know, like, young, underage women, saving them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that can get somebody's blood up.
Yeah.
In a good way.
I was just thinking, in, like, sometimes you play a character, and your character does things that you would never do.
Right.
So, in a game
like
about...
Like sex trade.
Yeah, like sex... Well, I mean, yeah, we're going to go there, so...
Where are we going?
It's not me, it's my character.
Yeah, no, but I could see that. I mean... If you set up that kind of game, then one of the players might say, no, that's what my character would do. I'm playing a character. Kind of no different from, like, an actor who plays that role in a movie. So...
If your group really wants to go that direction, I suppose that's okay. It's up to you, but it's not something that I would be comfortable going
And that's just it. I've said this before, but one of those things you need to talk about first.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, people are making criminal characters.
Yeah.
I think that does raise a good point in that perhaps players don't and the storyteller don't talk enough
mm-hmm.
when they're playing just your typical party of adventurers or a group of people.
I'm a fighter.
But, yeah, but you could even do, like, if you're playing World of Darkness and somebody plays the actor and somebody mm-hmm. has a DJ and then somebody plays, you know, crime underling, you know, organized crime underling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, yeah. What have you done? What are you willing to do?
Yeah,
you've just created a very gray character. Just playing the rogue, that has kind of like a lovable connotation, as opposed to the thief, which is a little worse, or the rapist, which...
a lot worse?
A lot worse than that.
Jesus.
How many skill points does the rapist get?
Yeah.
I think he got cut from second edition AD.
Wow.
But, you know, I mean, that said, that's good advice for any kind of player. I mean,
no, exactly. But maybe sometimes you do need... To play a game like that, everybody does create the characters just because when the next time they play just a regular game, they're just that much more aware of how far are you willing to go? You've said your guy is this, mm-hmm. but are you really that much mm-hmm. of an anti-hero? Or?
Like you said, with the actress, you know, how far are you willing to go to get that part? Because the casting director, he's pretty horny.
I thought he said actor, but anyway, took it a different direction.
Actress.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
The point still stands.
Like that thing
in
LA Confidential, like that. Would you be willing to plant evidence on a victim or on a criminal you knew to be guilty to get him convicted?
And that harkens back if you're using them as antagonists, and you do have the Teflon or the
Teflon Don?
The Teflon Don, the untouchable boss, is the players have that conflict of they're trying to like kind of skip ahead.
Yeah.
And they can't find the clues, or they can't find the evidence, so they just plant it.
Yeah.
And that's good. They might accomplish the story, but then you have that moral finish there. It's like,
I could see that being a story in and of itself.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But again, like you said, it's per group. You know, if your group is interested in exploring those kinds of morals, that's good. If they're up for a good wild shooty time, then maybe not.
Probably not, yeah.
If they're good wild shooty time, then again, you go back to the...
Well, for that, too.
Can you trade that phrase, good wild shooty time? I like that.
Good wild shooty time. But then you go like the Robin Hood thing. Mm-hmm. You guys are pretty good.
But if you're doing this for some combat and good old fun like that, you don't really need that deep of a reason behind it.
Yeah, you're the outlaws.
Yeah.
You know, like people, just outlaws, like, you know, just riding the bike as opposed to the Hells Angels.
For some reason, I imagine a bicycle, not motorcycle. I don't know why. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're not wearing a bicycle helmet.
They're bad. Because
we're bad like that.
I'm going to skin his knees.
Yeah. You see elbow pads on these suckers? I don't.
So it might be a bit of a cliche, but another way to do protagonist is kind of the classic traitor story, where the group would be all members of organized crime, and one of them would possibly be an informant to the FBI or police.
Ooh, that's tough. One player outside of the group.
Well, not. I don't know how you would do it.
Yeah, I thought you were going to do, like, maybe they're all
that's what I was thinking
traitors too, or...
Well, you could go that way. They're all traitors, or...
Do they do that? Do, like, undercover cops, are they working groups?
What's that?
Do undercover cops work in groups?
I don't know.
I don't believe so.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think they have, like, their handler,
but
they would only put one in.
Yeah. I imagine they would only put one in. I guess you could do it... They wouldn't even have to be a traitor. There just could be, like, a rumor of one of them if you wanted a very sort of paranoid game. It's like, I don't know, I imagine that, you know, organized criminals can be rather paranoid, you know?
So if we looked at a movie like The Departed...
Yeah, that's kind of where I got it from.
So you would think one person play... Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler.
No, it's not a spoiler.
No.
One person plays DiCaprio. And then you got Jack Nicholson and then the nameless guys.
Oh, possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg.
But no, that's how I thought the story would play out.
Oh, I see.
It's like you have like the Martin Sheen, the Mark Wahlberg, and the one guy's the insider. And then they're working, or they're all like, you bend reality. You do that all the time for games. So you put in three moles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could.
Three undercover cops.
That could be fun. Or,
and if you wanted to play a paranoid game like you're saying, that'd be pretty interesting to make them wonder, are they actually?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. Like, you could either do it where the group thinks one of them is...
That game would fall apart.
Yeah, it would fall apart real fast. Or, I guess it gets a little bit more action-y, but you could do kind of afterwards, they're trying to get out, you know, kind of extricate themselves from this group.
Just when I think they got out, they pull me back in.
Yeah, essentially. Or, I guess another way to show the organized crime in kind of a slightly better light is...
Because we need to do
that? No. I'm not saying it. But, like, once the people are in the organization, there's always... from what I understand, I know nothing about police. There's always kind of that worry, like, they start seeing the people in the group as people that they are, and they kind of start associating with them more to the point where...
Because betrayal is betrayal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. You're betraying somebody.
Well, you kind of at least.
It's hard, though, because, you know, players are never going to care about NPCs as much as they would about a real person.
Well, no, fair enough, but, I mean, at the end of the game, it's a game. And
no, I like the idea. One challenge, maybe, again, how to do that as a group.
I think your bending reality thing is fine.
Yeah, so I would still think you'd want them all as. Initially as the undercover cops. Let's just use that example for now. But then you throw in the twist is that all of the, you know, we're talking about giving history to a setting. Like you have all these prejudices and they're wrong. You know, maybe you're the undercover merry men and you find out, well, the sheriff of Nottingham is actually wrong. You know, he's the bad guy in this story.
Yeah.
That could be a good way to do it. In kind of any setting, you make the people who are supposed to be good.
The players are torn between two groups of NPCs. The ones, you know, the side of law and order, who they were working for initially, or perhaps still are, and you find out that these guys aren't very oppressive, and they all have motives, and they're all stealing for, you know, to feed their kids.
Yeah, and you know, you can even make it a more of a moral controversy. There is, if the law and order isn't actually bad, it's maybe just the sheriff who's bad.
No, I would see that as being easier.
But it's a different game.
It's a different game. Sorry.
It's a different game. But I mean, the challenge there is, in a way, that would be harder actually, because you don't want to kill all the
You can't take down the organization. You don't want to.
They have the regular officers, and you don't want to just like. Because if you have a case where the players then decide completely with the organized crime organization, organized crime group, then they're just going to cut their way through all the
police
law,
officers.
Yeah, right. All the exactly. police officers.
But if the sheriff himself, like, he is a Teflon Don, imagine, supported by the entire country.
Gosh, I'm going to bring up the movie and the remake. Have you guys seen Assault on Precinct 13?
I've only seen the remake. Wait, no, I take that back. I've seen both. Yes, I did see the old one.
And that was two. They're actually gangs, but I guess no. One's more organized crime in the remake. I like both of them. I think I prefer the original John Carpenter one because
really?
It's John Carpenter.
I didn't like it all that much, but
back to
neither one.
The original one. I like the actually not come to think, but yeah, neither one.
All right. When you decide what your opinion is, we'll get back to you.
You know me. That'll never happen.
Your point was
absolutely. So like, if you look at the remake of Assault on Precinct 13. Yeah, then you've got the corrupt. But it's a really good movie in that, you know, it's a lot of action, a lot of tension. But yeah, basically you're going to cut your way through those guys because they're bad. Whereas if you had like an embedded corrupt boss of a normal organization, a corrupt police chief of just a regular police organization, then that would actually be more challenging to get rid of them.
Yeah, because then the regular police officers are people you would.
And in both cases, movies, they're siding with criminals to help them. In the first movie, they're siding with criminals to fight other criminals, so there's less tension there. And in the second one, they're siding with criminals to fight police officers.
The movie, I can't remember the guy's name. Black actor, long face. He was just recently in that one with the Runaway Train.
Oh, Denzel Washington.
Thank you. How did you forget that?
Yeah. I know. I was sitting there for minutes. I know his name. How the hell?
Wow. That's why he has such a pained expression.
Whatever happened to him after Glory?
That's why it was so agonizing.
That's a good movie. I really enjoyed that movie.
Agreed. The movie where he played the L.A. cops and they were really corrupt.
Training Day.
Thank you. That was what I was thinking of. There's an example of a really corrupt organization that's supposed to be the good guys.
Mm. Well, he was like a one-man corrupt organization, wasn't he?
And that's kind of goes into a more modern version of what we were saying just before.
Sure. That's a case where he's quite likable. He's a very charismatic character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the way he's a great villain.
Yeah,
he's a good for the twist in that you're kind of dealing with these criminals, these gangs, really, mm-hmm. in that movie. And you're with this one guy who's more experienced. So if you take the movie Colors, mm-hmm. where you have the Robert Duvall, the experienced cop, versus Sean Penn, the hothead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same scenario, but you flipped it because he's saying, well, this is how you deal with these guys. This is the way you really deal with criminals. Yeah. And then you find out, oh,
no, actually,
that's because he's a criminal. Yeah. Oh, that's wrong. But then, he's actually, I guess you could say he is enforcing his own code on these criminals. And, you don't do this. I mean, just go back to the beginning of the episode when you talk about organized crime, it's about the codes.
Hmm.
And there it's this this corrupt cop enforcing his or her code.
Yeah, he's a vigilante. And if you even want to go that route, Batman,
No, Batman, definitely a vigilante, yeah.
Well, yeah, the police hated him.
Hmm.
But he wasn't the bad guy.
Yep.
Wow, okay, I'm trying to think how to bring it back to gangsters, Like, all right, movie, Batman, and way off in left field now. And you know what? Wait, I take it back. Batman ended up fighting a lot of gangsters on occasion.
I was thinking that, but I was wondering what my point would be. But actually, I remember
high school Batman.
And this was something I was going to bring up earlier, and then I wasn't getting the link. But we do have that with the Joker and the Penguin, and they're basically these little crime families.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually just go on with the more mundane crime families. I think they're like mafia or something. Mm. But you could see those supervillains as just different crime families, but. What I was thinking is, if you're portraying gangsters, of course, body language, the outfit, the way they talk is important for any NPC.
Mm-hmm.
But for gangsters, I think especially, if we think of when we think of Yakuza, we immediately think of...
They're flamboyantly gangs.
The way they dress in a very garish, flamboyant...
Bright pink and green suits.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any great bright pink and green. I've seen
they kind of got that weird tracksuit.
That's more of the fiction of it, what they show in movies and such. But the real guys say, the most common thing I hear from Japanese people about how do you tell a Yakuza is their swagger, the way they walk.
Yeah, the way they walk or the and I know a lot of Japanese people squat when they're standing outside. They'll squat and which is kind of unusual. There's like four people.
Well, culturally, it's considered rude, and that's one of the things they do to show that they don't care. They're tough.
So you have like the bad kids, and if you imagine listeners, and if you're in North America or Europe or whatever, and you're outside a convenience store, and instead of leaning, got that tough lean,
they kind of squat. They
tough squat.
They got a tough squat, which is it looks uncomfortable. To be honest.
Yeah.
But that if you had like a guy who's talking to you squatting, and if
they don't even bother to stand up,
yeah, and the way they speak, and they definitely play this up in Yakuza movies with that voice, which I don't think that many deep voiced men have been birthed in Japan. So obviously they're putting it on, so you should put it on when you have that gangster. And do the forget about it, the Jersey accent if you're doing
as many explicatives as you can.
Yeah. They do if you're doing the mafia, because it makes them crude.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Ideally it'd be good if your players are accepting of profanity being used at the table.
Yeah.
Also,
it'd be pretty hard to run a gangster story when you couldn't throw an expletive.
You'll frack you.
Yeah.
I guess.
And you find that because they are very crude, one thing is they'll use a few more slurs more than the average person would.
Yeah.
I can't say that this is Yakuza, but this is more like Mafia. Or,
yeah, and it, like if you're building that kind of stuff in, create your own slurs. I think, was it last week's episode? We were saying like create curse words and things like that to really give flavor?
Oh, yeah.
Assuming that you're creating your own organization instead of going with an existing one, but
yeah, I think that depends on. That's
a good point, and it's like I think D&D is common. People are really familiar with the standard D&D setting. So if you have Paylor, you can imagine that invoking that person's name in vain is as bad as saying it.
Saying a curse word
with God. Yeah, I'm trying to like, how do I say this without saying
it? Paylor's balls. That sucks.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I'm a bit offended, but
which is actually something that I think kind of is missing from a lot of fantasy.
But be careful because you don't want to make it, unless you want kind of a, you know, what do you say, a wildly fighty kind of game?
Oh yeah, wild and shooty.
Wild and slashy kind of game. Then that's fine. But if you want to make that that sewer scenario that much darker, and they are like kind of using throwing like around these gods' names and invoking them because they don't care if they get struck down.
Yeah.
So I think that could add a lot of flavor to the gangster.
Yeah, which is, I think, it's missing in a lot of fantasy games. I think thieves' guilds are often portrayed as
sneaky.
Well, sneaky. Silent. Actually, I think.
Well, that's the thing that I get.
Well, you're right. I mean, but I suppose that goes with being thieves and all. But they seem to get that fantastic kind of Robin Hood feel to them.
Mm.
Like it's rare that at least I don't think I've ever played a campaign where the thieves' guild has been like a real mafia organization.
Well, that's a really good point. Like. Making them feel really, really bad. And I guess slavery is a way to infuse that.
Yeah.
But you're right. That a lot of times, they kind of just seem like just another guild.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's like, well, you're not really secretive because you call yourself the Thieves Guild, and there you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you definitely need to use some of those tropes to give it a little weight. Like the shadowy boss might work a little better. Yeah. Or the guy that mysteriously elevated himself to Lord, even though everyone says he's part of the Thieves Guild. And how did that happen?
Yeah.
That might be an interesting story.
Absolutely. And yeah. I'm guilty of that myself. The last game I ran, it was that kind of stereotypical Thieves Guild. You know, you guys never ran across it. But.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to rack my brain there. I'm like, we didn't see anybody like that.
Did we?
I was going to say, I think that's because most of the stuff presented in supplemental books, it's kind of assumed that this organization is one that player characters could join.
True.
That's kind of always the way they're presented. Unless the material explicitly says these are bad guys only, which they rarely do.
And if they do that, it's they usually split it down. They often call it the Assassin's Guild.
Yeah, something kind of very negative.
Yeah, I think because if you have a published product, it's really hard.
Mm.
Because if you have drugs, people...
Unless you're White Wolf.
Right. Yeah, which try to present itself as for adults. And they've kind of like accepted, we're an adult game.
One naked person in every book.
Yeah, they do have a lot of nudity. Yeah, never noticed that.
There's a reason why I collect those books.
Yeah. Why do I keep them in the bathroom?
Yeah. I like the pictures of emaciated, drugged out chicks naked. Yeah. Ugh.
But a fantasy game, generally, they try to appeal to a broader audience, there are a lot of times the gateway game for young people.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to splash around a lot of like drug use in the promotion, and I guess the rituals you tone down. I know D&D 3rd edition they tried with the drawn a blank. What's the bad one?
Book of Vile Darkness.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even the that's a good book. But even the counterpart. The Book of Exalted Deeds, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Didn't they make that as like an apology?
No, but both books say mature content.
Yeah.
And I forget exactly why they say that for the Book of Exalted Deeds, but
because they're trying to balance
it
out.
They're trying to sell it.
Maybe.
Vile Darkness.
Maybe. He was so good. He cured lepers. Really? What's so controversial about this one? And I guess that this is like classic. Is you basically like reskin?
Mm-hmm.
You take a real criminal organization, reskin it, put it into another world, another genre, and then you got something with a lot of panache,
absolutely.
Which is what we I think
Yeah,
real mobsters probably don't have a lot of panache. What they think, like the swagger that you talk, yeah. Yakuza,
but you know, in is really only TV a step shows, above what salaryman do. That's what we're doing for a game, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because
yeah, that makes use stereotypes a little bit.
No, even if you don't go with stereotypes, just go over the top, just bring it out.
Hmm. Oh, absolutely, yeah, and you know the shadowy lighting, you know, for that conversation, you know. They probably like solariums as much as anybody.
Yeah.
We'd have that conversation.
Aren't you supposed to have it in like a...
I'd always freaking meet in the dark.
No, aren't you supposed to have it in like a well-lit restaurant just in a back corner where the guy just kind of like, you know, waves you over and,
right.
You know, says his threat through like
eating
a...
spaghetti.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, his threat through like a mouthful of pasta. You know? No?
No, that would definitely add it. It is crude.
Or soba.
Or soba, yeah.
The juxtaposition is somebody with a lot of style but speaks very crudely.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that use of Donald Trump where he's a billionaire with like a thousand-air vocabulary. I don't know. He speaks like he's just from Jersey.
Wow.
What's that guy do? Yeah, there you go. There's a classic.
Yeah, well, he actually has that accent too.
He's like a character.
Yeah, he really
there you go.
Yeah.
He's like right out of the movies.
Man, could you imagine if he became president?
But yeah, and even though the craze, like, that's actually a real example of twins. That's interesting. Make them twins.
Yeah.
Twin bosses.
Make one of them insane.
Yeah. Make them both insane, because you're over the top. Like
they're crazy.
And that's also a nice juxtaposition, is that it is organized crime. We've already overused this word, so.
Yeah.
But that implies a certain structure. But then you've got like these crazy guys, anarchic guys in charge of it. So like can you have an anarchist in charge of organized crime?
And that could also be a very, very fun campaign to play as well. It's falling apart because of these insane guys.
Would you play it where you're trying to actually shore it up?
You know, I was actually thinking about that while I was saying that.
Losing all this money on the sex slave and the heroin trade.
No, I think it'd probably be good from the other side, maybe playing up members of the police. Or actually, if you want to take it on that fantasy bent, you know, the Thieves Guild has always been kind of they're allowed to exist because they're not that bad. All they do is steal stuff from the marketplace.
Yeah.
But what if some crazy guy has taken over and they're doing a lot worse things now? What do you do? And do you try and get rid of it because they had their function in the city before? It was stable.
From experience, you're going to have to give them a real good function that they had in the past.
Well, they organize it. Instead of there being lots of petty crime, some of which turn violent, the Thieves Guild keeps it from turning violent and keeps it as just petty crime. Pickpocketing instead of muggings. As an example.
As an example, no. But.
Well, use your infiltrator idea there, Wayne. Or a traitor idea, is that what if another organization has infiltrated?
Mm-hmm.
There's talk of like...
Evil Assassin's Guild?
Like an evil Assassin's
Guild. The Assassin's Guild has infiltrated the Thieves Guild, and things are collapsing.
I mean, if you need
the real-world example I was thinking of is the Chechnyan mob, and they have strong connections to like Islamic fundamentalists.
Oh, Al-Qaeda, yeah.
And, you know, maybe you're all for supporting, maybe you're Islamic and you're all for supporting Islamic terrorists, if they're doing a certain thing. But then there was talk about nuclear warheads and supplying them with that, and that could be a step too far for you.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of a bizarre, but if a place for the players to be, it's like, well, I'm okay with the drugs, but I'm not okay with the nuclear warheads. But
you know,
you're trying to like bring it back to... In your eyes, a sane... Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what we were talking about before. Remember, we said you might want to include something like the sex trade to give something for the players to rail against.
Yeah.
But maybe put them in a position of the soft crimes. You know, maybe they're... I know this is a terrible example for a player character, but an accountant, you know? So they deal with the money laundering and with the broken white-collar victimless crimes, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly things have started changing, you know, and they have things that are going too far. The mafia has started dealing with the sex trade. And are the players okay with that? I'd hope not, because then you won't have a campaign. But
well, you do. You just have to go a completely different direction.
Yeah, or they try and get a
weapon
or something.
Like, would you really want to explore that?
It depends. It's just an idea.
Like, that's a very broad question. But yeah, you've kind of presented this as the bad crime, and the players are like, oh, what's the crime?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to rail against?
But I suppose if you're looking for some kind of a campaign with a moral with a moral decisions to be made, that could be an example.
Isn't that the moral decision, the fact that they're okay with it?
But what if you don't like that? Would you scrap the game? This is a very general question. Taking it away, the players have made a decision that you think is morally reprehensible.
Then I guess personally I would scrap the game.
Yeah. Maybe it's one of those things where you should talk to the players about it beforehand.
No, but I think if it progresses in game, right? If you set up this sort of, by your definition, horrible thing that they were supposed to sort of not choose, and then the players do choose it. Personally, I think as a GM, I would have to say, you know what? Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, the story's over. I didn't really want to go that way and didn't expect you to.
And then your players beat you up because they're okay with sex slaves.
Well, no, then they turn you into a sex slave. But...
what?
Well, obviously, if they're okay with it, you find yourself shipped off somewhere. Before I brought that up, I was going to say that almost kind of brings you back full circle to the code you had mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Lyle. How?
Yeah, what it does right? Somehow. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Go on.
Whatever crime it was, somehow is going against the code that everybody had agreed to, mm-hmm. that the organization had sworn, and now you're kind of essentially taking it back to its roots, or sort of shoring it up, or. Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
We're going to take this back to the roots.
All right.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
No, I understand what you're saying.
It's like you establish it, and so the players can't then come back with, I'm playing a character. And you're like, well, actually, you're not.
Mm.
Because you haven't said that in the character.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the player is a little curious why they're playing a paladin in the theme skill. Dude, you're a lot of a paladin. You're totally against the sex slave. Yeah. I'm also wondering why I'm okay with all the stealing.
Because you're stealing from people who are corrupt. We're still stealing.
Yeah. Once you have them as protagonists, and somehow you're supposed to sympathize with the gangsters, then it's you're walking a line. And I just think that we had mentioned that in a couple podcasts that you walk the line, but sometimes the players cross it, and what do you do? Mm. And sometimes you could just, instead of like just closing the book and packing it up, but yeah. Then you change the story where they get a consequence really fast, and then end it. And you all get arrested.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nuke you're trying to import, it just went off. I'm sorry.
Wow. You say that as a joke, but yeah, maybe they're okay.
Where are you going with this? I'm wondering.
Yeah, they're okay. You kind of set it up, and we use the real world example of the nuclear warhead. Unconfirmed, by the way, so people don't worry. And Bin Laden's dead. He was apparently the person buying it from the Chechnyan.
It was like 15 years ago, too, so...
So they would have used...
Also a good thing to add.
They would have used it by now. If they're okay with it, then make it unstable. And it goes off in their hometown or whatever. Mm. They're storing it, goes off in that town. Bam, they lose their family. Now what do you do?
Yeah.
Now, they get a double cross from the terrorists.
Yeah.
The terrorists are like, we were just going to get some sex slaves from here, but your sister's looking pretty good.
Yeah.
So how about you?
And now we have the nuke. Or for that matter, even like you said, goes off in their hometown. How about goes off in the town of the people that you were buying it from? Now this entire organization is against you.
Yeah.
Mama, what's left of it? Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a nuclear explosion here.
Casa Nostra is pretty big. I don't know. Chechnya is not, but hey.
Yeah, some very angry and very sick monsters are hunting you down.
And no hair, but I still get a gun.
And they're going to be coming at you mighty fast because they don't have long to live.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, that line we always talk about? Slightly over.
Mutant powers.
Oh, mutant powers. Oh. Since when are we playing Marvel Superheroes? Since you decided to sell that new Mr. Incredible Hulk.
Did you throw my train? We'll see where it goes.
Wow.
All right, so we touched on...
a lot of stuff.
Mutants, teenagers, gangsters.
Yeah.
But if you, final question, if you were going to get somebody in the mood for playing your gangster game, and we said, even taking modern gangsters and using it for fantasy, one movie. What would be one movie you'd recommend?
Okay, I'll go first. Probably Goodfellas.
Yep. And why would you choose Goodfellas?
Just because it sets all the characters up as sort of being kind of like a brotherhood, a group. Yeah, that's kind of what, if you're going for that kind of story, and the player characters are gangsters, that's kind of what you want to, I guess, engender in them, that, kind of the code of silence. I think Goodfellas does a pretty good job showing that.
Yep. I'm going to say, and it's a toss-up between The Craze and Zatoichi, but I'm going to say Zatoichi because it's a fantastic movie. But also, it's a good example of the shadowy boss. It is in the past, so it's good. Like, if somebody was deciding to run fantasy, but it's also then you could port that to a modern setting.
You're talking about the Kitano one?
Yeah, sorry. I should say I believe it's the most recent Zatoichi.
Yeah, Takeshi Kitano.
Yeah.
For anybody who wants to see it.
Yeah, because this character, the blind swordsman, is in a lot of movies, and a lot of them are called Zatoichi. So the one,
even TV series and such, but yeah, really good movie.
But then you got the shadowy organization. You also see an example of, oh, I'm thinking of another one as well. But you also see the example of a mob war. Mm-hmm. On that level, you also look at, they're very easy to distinguish. But you know, something I didn't even think about it at first, but Yojimbo, Kurosawa Akira, Yojimbo, which was remade into Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
And that's really good about rival gangs, and it's one's a Western, one set in the Edo period Japan.
Mm-hmm. Last Man Standing was a remake of that as well.
And
Bruce Willis.
No, we don't need yet another remake. Right? Bruce Willis, but there you go, and it's very easy to see it, the role of the players, mm-hmm. and playing off, which we actually didn't touch on, but playing off each other. Mm-hmm. Playing the gangs off each other and trying to basically fan the flames, because then in the aftermath they're easier to pick off. Hmm. And there's a lot of swagger, a lot of style, and you can see how your gray character would fit in, because both the Clint Eastwood character and the Toshio Mifune?
Toshihiro Mifune, yeah.
Yeah, Toshihiro Mifune are very gray characters. And how they do without crossing the line, which is something that, gosh, I pointed to Wayne when I said without crossing the line. Wayne,
you almost stabbed him in the chest with your finger. Really. Too.
Do I cross the line that often?
No, it's just like I just remembered something. And yeah.
I'm racking my brain for it. The only thing that's coming to mind is actually the one I mentioned before, Brother.
I haven't seen that one, actually. Couldn't you tell me a little bit about that?
I've got it on DVD here, if you like. But it's about a Yakuza guy who...
That's got, like, Omar Epps?
Yes, it does. Yeah. He's actually the second character, Kitano. But it's about a Yakuza guy who goes to L.A. I can't remember the reason for it, but he's quite a big boss, and he meets up with a disenfranchised gang member there, and they kind of start their own small organized crime group, and they start taking on other ones. So it's a different case on it. It's definitely kind of the David versus Goliath, but everybody's evil. So,
would that be interesting, starting your own organized crime family?
You know, I've never actually played a campaign like that, but I've heard it on other podcasts how a lot of people really enjoy the building something, like building an empire or a castle.
Yeah, you hear that. It's like players want to, empire build.
Yeah.
Players want to accumulate stuff. Mm. Yeah. But that would be, sometimes you wonder is like, well, how do I get those different players to work together? And there, some games I think lend themselves very well to it, such mm-hmm. as like Vampire, which has like a clan or a covenant, and you could easily drop it in and say, now establish your covenant in this city. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, like, it might be a little bit too much of the black and white kind of idea, but they always say, good works together well, but it gets complacent. Evil is always ready, but they don't work together well. That'd be an interesting way to take that, too, because building an organized crime group, the player characters...
You're all bound by the code.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't have to get along at all.
No, but you have to work together still.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Which would lend itself very well to Vampire.
And you would recommend watching Brother for that type of story?
Yes, I would.
All right.
Thank you for making that good, because I couldn't think of another movie.
Have you seen Hanabi?
I haven't, no.
Oh, okay. I saw it a long time ago.
Oh, Hanabi.
Hanabi.
Ah, sorry, yeah, I wasn't trying to be a jerk there.
Hair split.
Yes, and I have, and it's a very good movie.
Yeah. Not a gangster, isn't it?
Yeah, but it wasn't the main story, but...
Okay.
Begrudging concession, all right.
All right, well, that was our second creature feature, and we looked at gangsters and how to run it, and if I was going to play, I'd actually... That last idea that we just kind of threw out there, building that crime family.
Could be a lot of fun.
Or expanding it.
I'd actually really like to do that as a vampire game.
No, I actually, it's in one of the books. It actually might even be in the main book, or the Storyteller's Guide. But sorry for the Requiem. But one of the ideas is this is basically build up mm-hmm. vamp vampires in an area, either a part of the city or in a city.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it did seem, very different from what I normally play or not what I normally run. So
yeah,
I'd like to try that.
Yeah, definitely. Especially because vampire, you kind of have to walk that seedy line, you know, between good and bad. And that's something that you could, that would be mirrored well with a mafia kind of setting.
And then you could actually, and this kind of gets into whether people would just want to play normal people in a game. But there, you kind of, you go past that because they're playing vampires.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, you kind of got that, oh, I've got special powers so I can do cool things.
Yeah.
And you're building what essentially is just an organized crime family.
Yeah, especially because if people aren't comfortable with there being crimes, you can make the, like, drinking blood from people. That's, it's not a crime per se, but something that's already built in as part of the system. That's not good.
I'm curious about that. Is drinking blood from people a crime? I don't know.
Well, actually, you know, come to think about
it, I think it would be.
Probably a statute against it somewhere. I'm reading.
Yeah. I probably. Well, yeah, it's probably. There's statutes like.
Don't shoot whales from your car in L.A.
Yeah.
It's,
oh, okay. Yeah, there's one about eating ice cream between certain hours in one town. I can't remember what it was. No, but I'm thinking, like. Yeah, you would be assaulting the person, but I don't think drinking blood is illegal if it's given willingly.
Probably not.
Don't know.
Because there's that fetish.
Surrounding. And we're in Japan, so.
No, I actually think the fetish isn't in Japan. Other
places. I'm surprised. I'm surprised it's not.
Oh, I'm sure it's here.
Oh, I don't know if it is or isn't.
Well, we'll research that for next time.
All right. Well, we'll have the answer of where it is legal or illegal to drink blood consensually in our next episode. But thanks for stopping by and listening to this one.
Yeah.
Let's hope you didn't just listen to the last few minutes there.
Yeah. All right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Road, and it makes me
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.